Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjee. I'm Svetlana.
And I'm Ben.
In season 2, we will be traveling around the globe, out of Switzerland, and bring amazing leaders from businesses, thought leaders, political leaders, of course, investors and experts.
We're working at implementing and realizing all the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, better known as SDGs.
And they are also making profit.
Hello, I am Amina Gurifakim, and I'm the sixth president of the Republic of Mauritius.
My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation.
I'm Michael Lichtenstein. I'm an entrepreneur here in Lichtenstein. I'm running on one side a financial services company.
You know, hundreds of deals a month, we are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing.
So join us to discover impact investing ecosystem.
See you every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
See you on Friday. Act with impact.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone. And from our viewers from the Far East and Japan and Australia, good night.
Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjee. I'm so happy. 1 week ahead, and today is actually already, we have week 11 of season 2, where we interview amazing guests from all around the world, policymakers, investors, businesses, activists, and of course, projects in impact investing. You see, today we are in Zurich on Paradeplatz at the very core and heart of financial center in Switzerland.
And there you can see the UBS
and Credit
and
Suisse.
Credit Suisse.
Yay. I almost have nostalgia, you know, when I was working at Paradeplatz myself. You don't see my bank there. But yeah, it was a good time. But the world is changing, so we need to move on.
So before we start, I again want to remind our viewers about the project we started on the name of my sister, Joya, who passed away, I think, 6 weeks ago from COVID. To thank you, first of all, for everybody who is supporting us on this project, because we are bringing help to the rural parts of India, hospitals, medical support, and all that. And all the help you can give, please, you're most welcome. And you can find all information on the website Camomile. That is CAMOMILE.CH.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We continue gathering donations. So from 10 to 50,000 Swiss francs, any help is very welcome here. And so usually we are talking about impact investing a little bit in the beginning. But today, as I was recording a couple of videos, let's just watch one video so I don't need to talk one more time about impact investing. Let's play video now. So what is impact investing? The definition, which is provided by Global Impact Investing Network and recognized around the world, is the following. So it is investment which generate positive social and environmental return beside financial return. And of course, it must be done with intention and the impact must be measurable. Okay, but what is the market size? So around the world, currently more than $800 billion are already invested in this topic. And if we go a little bit deeper, right? So what kind of companies do investors, impact investors, invest? So it is so-called, of course, social enterprises. But important is that they are, first of all, financially self-sustainable. They do create and measure impact. They are innovative and disruptive. How on earth you are going to combine high returns and impact otherwise if you are not using modern technologies or if you are not using innovative business models, right? So you must be innovative and disruptive. And last but not least, those companies are scalable. So we are talking about companies which are possible to scale up maybe in terms of one city or country, several countries. But don't forget that we don't want to scale unreasonably. And it's very important if you are a social entrepreneur to think about how big you want to grow. And last but not least, how are impact investments related to sustainable development goals? For those who are new, so sustainable development goals were defined by United Nations in 2015, and more than 17 goals, they are behind 169 targets of the social, environmental, and economical goals for the whole society, which we want to reach by 2030. And the fun part is that actually nowadays, impact investors, impact investing funds, and entrepreneurs are applying SDGs as a framework. So basically, SDGs are the impact themes, which makes our life easier. So if you are into climate change, or if you want to contribute towards accessible education goal number 4, then you put it on your pitch deck as a project, for example, so investor would find you. That's great. So I don't need to talk, actually. Next time you ask me what is impact investing, I will say, let's play the video. Yeah. So
then, now I finally understand what it is.
Okay, great. So we defined impact investing, but let's not undermine our tradition and start with a story. So do you have any amazing facts or something to impress our audience?
Impress? I don't know. I think it will be more about making them depressed.
As usual.
I was thinking yesterday that everyone, we are talking about different models of economical theories, research, and this is going on since quite a long time. And we have been busy. We have had previous speakers also on this topic. But the issue is that the situation is really deteriorating really fast. Shouldn't we worry? Because even the government seems to be lacking the will and motivation to think further than 2 years. And I'm talking about all the governments. So I want to mention a couple of facts today. I think I'll stick to just a few. I was doing some calculation yesterday. So, you know, this COVID is going on in India. So you can buy a 10-liter oxygen tank for 80 Swiss francs in Indian rupees. So that comes to 1 liter is approximately 8 Swiss franc. On other hand, an average cow weighs 544 kilos. That was one of the statistics. Maybe some of these assumptions are wrong, but it just gives the basic idea how it is. Lifespan of a cow can be 18 plus years if it is not slaughtered or butchered in upfront. And assuming that a cow consumes the same amount of oxygen that a man or a human being does, that is 71 million liters of air in its average lifetime.
We are following you. Yeah, continue.
Which is, if you take our atmosphere, it is 20% oxygen approximately, so which comes to 14 million liters of oxygen, thus coming to a value of 113.6 million Swiss franc of oxygen.
So what is 1 kilo of meat then?
Exactly. So 1 kilo of meat only on the oxygen is more than 200,000 Swiss franc.
Wow.
And we are not calculating the methane that the cow produces because it gives out methane, which is far more potent greenhouse gas than CO2. And we are also not calculating the water it drinks, because that then the amount will be horrendous. So just, I'm curious, how many people in the world know of this fact that each and every kilo or each and every piece of beef we are eating is worth a few hundred thousand Swiss francs?
Imagine you go to supermarket and then the price has changed. A kilo of beef is, how much did you say? 200,000 Swiss francs. And you look at that and think, yeah, I go vegan today, yeah?
Exactly. Uh-huh. That's fact one. Fact number two, I was talking yesterday to a friend of mine. They mentioned that he was talking to somebody from the indigenous tribe in the Arctic. And last week, when he was talking to them, he said, how is the weather there? So minus 30, minus 35, normal. He was talking this week. I said, how is the weather? 30 something. And they said, you mean minus 35? He said, no, plus 30. So that means in 1 week, the temperature jumped from minus 30, minus 35 to plus 30.
But the average is what? Zero.
That's what the rest of the world think. And I think many of the Trump followers think. But that's... So what worries me is that how long will the nature tolerate our greed and our ignorance? And nature has been hitting back. It has been hitting back. For example, look at COVID. COVID is just a very tiny reaction of the nature to our activities, our actions. And it is hitting back in many ways, whether deforestation, loss of biodiversity and all that. So the scary part is, when will the nature deliver us the uppercut, which will put completely lay down the whole humanity?
I mean, the nature is sending some signals, you know. It's like in life, when you don't get it first, maybe a little stone falls on your head, you didn't get it, then a brick falls, okay, and then the part of the mountain falls, and then you get it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Then you change the direction or behaviors, and it's like, yeah, I changed my life from that moment when I got sick or when I experienced that accident, whatever it is. So, but why are we waiting till that something that big happened? Why don't we change already now?
Exactly, and forecome. So the positive part I'm last hoping is at least soon, hopefully very soon, the present world leaders are replaced by those who have the intelligence and the courage to take the decisive steps to make the difference.
Absolutely. And I think it's time to welcome our guest now.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'm really excited because both of them are very involved in the finance world, and they co-founded amazing think tank which is developing new portfolio theory which includes sustainability into that. So welcome Petri Kosuto and Ville Korpela.
Exactly. And today I just want to warn you, it is going to be Svetlana's day because she's the banker and the financial expert. I'll just be facilitating and maybe translating the two of them.
No, don't. I've been away from the bank for some time, so I hope
you're teaching at the university.
So welcome, Petri. Hi, how are you doing? How are you doing, Billy?
Nice to be here.
Nice to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Great to have you. So let me quickly just introduce you to the audience for some who don't know you. So first, Petri Kosuto, and so you have more than 30 years of experience as chief investment officer, and you've been managing two largest pension funds in Finland, which have more than 40 billion euro in that. And of course, also sovereign wealth fund in Middle East. It's really impressive.
I think he should be able to finance the whole SDG.
Exactly. Yes. With his pension fund money, that would be really cool. And very excited, of course, I told it already, that you are the co-founder of Impact Innovation Institute, which is there to make research and advisory think tank, right? And this is what you are basically also very much engaged, so academic research on impact investing and this sustainable portfolio theory, which we will hear more about it today. I'm really excited about it. So great to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Ville Korpela, you are also have very impressive track record. You are futurist, so you are all into the future and impact strategies. You are, of course, also co-founding partner of Impact Innovation Institute, which we were just mentioned, and you are senior faculty member at Dubai Future Academy. And you are also a member of several World Economic Forum projects, such as Nature Action Agenda, Inclusivity Quotient, African Growth Platform, and Global Plastic Action Partnership. So it's really impressive. I see you guys very much engaged into the sector. And it's our pleasure to have you with us. Welcome, Billy.
Welcome.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you again.
So, and if we start with the very first question, maybe Petri, you first. Could you also introduce yourself, what the audience like didn't hear from me and what maybe nobody knows? So something personal and non-personal, just a few words about yourself and also then Billy.
Well, obviously you told the main point that I'm already getting old, that 30 plus years in the industry is a long time, but I mean, it's been quite rich in the culture way to first work in the Finland and run a couple of the most impactful entities here. And then go to Middle East, which is not only weather-wise, but also culturally very, very different place to work and do things. And in the Middle East, I was also running a 24/7 open treasury, which was Sharia compliant. So that's obviously not mm-hmm. something everybody gets to do. Otherwise, I'm a simple family man, father of five kids, and nowadays, yes, so far.
So far, oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
and obviously, I think it was Ville who started becoming a PhD student, which more dragged me also into this research area. I have some other companies to worry about too, but this is my most enthusiastic hobby.
All right, thank you, Petri. Thank you very much for sharing that. And Ville, tell us more about yourself.
Yes, I try to keep it short because sometimes when I start talking, you know, I might go on for hours. So
join
I
the club.
All speakers here, so we need to be to the point.
Yes, I try to keep this short and hopefully sweet. So I'm working as a professional futurist for the Dubai government. Dubai Future Academy is an initiative set up in 2017 to basically equip the senior government executives in the Dubai government with the future skills. And basically we are looking mostly at, you know, how technology is shifting, but also we look at where are we as humans shifting? Because a lot of times we forget that when we discuss technology governance and other issues, we forget that technologies are there to help us to achieve certain things. And that kind of led us to this whole discussion about the impact that we are creating, because a lot of times we do create impact, especially people who are blessed with positions to be of service, to serve in different institutional investment organizations and in the government. So the actions we take, we do shape the future based on the decisions we make today. But sometimes we don't look into the core of that. And that's really what you, Sveta, also mentioned at the very brief introduction to impact investing, as that the intention is really mm-hmm. at the core of everything that investments create, no matter if you call it impact or non-impact. Right. And also outside of my work with the Dubai Future Academy, I also have co-founded the Impact Innovation Institute together with Petri in January last year. And has been a tremendous journey to develop together with some of the leading minds in the world to share this idea about, you know, what the portfolio theory of the future could be like. Mm-hmm. But very
thank
good to be
you.
Here, and thank you for
the invitation. Yeah. Thank you very much, Ville. And maybe you can tell us also a bit more about activities of the Institute. So what do you do there?
Yeah, happy to do that. So we started even before we founded the Institute. We started talking with Petri in spring 2019, when both of us felt that there's just something missing from the way strategic asset allocation was being done. And obviously Petri has a longer track record in looking at the actual practices of asset allocation and how that is being viewed through the various strategies. And we felt that there is a missing component, which is the direction, or what we call the intent, was mm-hmm. largely missing. And then we started looking at what are the causes of that intent missing in the ways portfolios are being built. And then we started reading what Harry Markowitz has been writing in his classic work on the modern portfolio theory, and we found that there are some things which are amazing for the very purpose that they set in the time when it was being written. However, the global challenges that we face with climate change and a lot of these other things that result from the era of the Anthropocene actually then creates now the need that we need to revisit the modern portfolio theory. And we started by looking with the title that we set out for ourselves, what was that strategic asset allocation for the post-Markowitz era. So basically, what is the portfolio model that institutional investors should take today in order to be able to deal with the global challenges that we're facing? And then what we did after that is that we then started looking for collaborators. And so far, we have built a very active collaboration relationship with the Finland Futures Research Center, where I'm also officially pursuing my PhD on this very same topic at the moment. And also, we have collaborators in the University of Gävle in Sweden. We have collaborators in Switzerland. Foresight Solutions is our partner for a research that we will be discussing later on regarding one of our research programs, which is entitled Beyond Blended Finance. So the kind of blended finance, and especially what comes beyond that, is one of the key topics outside of the theoretical base of the sustainable portfolio theory that we're working on. And the second part that we will discuss also a bit in more detail in the later is looking at something that we're now collaborating with the Ubuntu Foundation in Africa regarding building a new economic model, which would be based, or a new model of economics, which would be based on the indigenous and ancient wisdom traditions, which have much more placed the responsibility at the core of how economic decision making is being done. Because that's actually one component that we feel is largely missing in the Western discourse at the moment.
It's great, you know, as a former student of banking and finance at the University of Zurich, where I studied traditional portfolio theory, it's really amazing that finally someone is doing that and bringing it forward, because as we've seen in 2008, financial crisis, right? Portfolio theory didn't work, and risk return doesn't save us when the crisis appears. So impact is very important to incorporate as a third dimension.
A big part of that that you mentioned, especially about the financial crisis, is something that we in Foresight and Future Studies, what we call the complexity mismatch. So there is a basic difference between complicated systems and complex systems. Complicated systems is like the Swiss watch. So you can take the Swiss watch into parts. And if you find that one of the pieces is not functioning, you can remove that part and place it with the right part. And if you place it back together in the way it was designed as a closed system, it will function perfectly again. But if you do the same thing with human systems in a corporation, you replace somebody that you feel is a problem. Actually, that so-called problem has many healthy relationships inside of that organization. And there is a lot of hidden knowledge that goes missing when that person is replaced by a new person. So whenever you do the replacement of a real person with somebody else in a complex system, you are actually creating a totally new system. And actually, this is the complexity mismatch, is that we think in our minds is that we can understand the financial system, we can understand economics, but the truth is that they are complex systems and we cannot understand them. So we tend to intervene in the wrong places. And then that creates a lot of problems, like we have seen with the pandemic responses, with the responses to financial crisis of 2008, 2009, and also with the way we handled, for example, the Fukushima nuclear accident and many others.
Right,
exactly.
And this is also related to natural capital or ecology, that they are not simple things to maneuver. And when you start maneuvering, you get a lot of unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. No, Patrick, since you are here, in your bio, you mentioned you consult for several institutional investors.
Yeah, I've been doing
more about it.
I've been doing that when I have time. but I consider myself still more as a serial entrepreneur. So I consult myself most of the time. But there are still some examples. Maybe I take one. Last year, I was working with one interesting project, which is concerning a climate change impact fund, and which is trying to mobilize money from the retail into climate change to be invested both to equity and fixed income markets. I mean, that sort of project, which interest are appealing to do. And of course, nowadays, when there is no regular monthly salary falling from the sky, so then it's also important to do some projects to be able to research and fund the research. We have quite big team already at the Impact Innovation Institute, and they need bread and butter as well.
Who is sponsoring the institute, by the way?
Nobody is sponsoring. I am sponsoring it.
Ah, with the pension fund money, right? With the 40 billion.
Yes, I've been working for a long time. But of course, I mean, the it seems that our research programs are getting bigger. So I think we need to find some time for fundraising as well, especially the blended finance research program is huge, and let's hope somebody can open their money box for us.
Petri, let's talk now about your sustainable portfolio theory. And can you explain it in a way that even people not from finance, layman, can understand what is it about, and also the difference to traditional portfolio theory?
Yeah, I will have a go. And and I think, as Ville was describing, we started by looking at the strategic asset allocation, which should be the main driver in the investing, and it is. And what we saw as a deficiency with the modern portfolio theory, that it's not looking at the purpose of the money or intentionality. And if you want to talk about sustainable investing, we have had tremendous amount of tailwind for the so-called ESG investing. Mm-hmm. I personally think is in its current format is little bit passé, because it's more about do no harm than real impact.
The numbers are 30 trillion, more than 30 trillions are in sustainable investing, but almost 20 trillions are in exclusion.
Most of that is just, you know, doing the easiest solution. You exclude something, and it's not what money should be about. Money has purpose. Money has enormous power. People just don't realize it always. Then with the strategic asset allocation paper, we found one component for it. I will just briefly describe it. Ville will talk longer about it, but it's the strategic four.
I usually do.
Yes, and it's about how do you prevent the surprises, not forecast. So a forecast tends to be linear in its nature from the current kind of historical situation or historical accident, and most of the bigger changes are coming from systemic changes, and we thought that if you claim you are a long-term investor, you should also have long-term horizon. There is a very useful theory within the foresight area, which most people are not known, that when people collaborate, they can actually co-create the future. So I think the biggest difference to normal portfolio theory is that markets are not created, they don't occur like the efficient markets hypothesis is claiming. Markets are inherently built by the participants. And so they are shaped by the ideas, values, norms, culture, and most of all of the intent. Because when you are doing investment decisions, you need to be focusing also on the impact side and not only for the wealth accumulation. And this is a massive difference on the theory. But let's go backward in time, what you need to be able to perform sustainable investing. And the first area, what we thought is that what people mostly are missing. So they take whatever benchmark is the other people are using, and they tend to be market capitalized
indices.
And if you think about debt market benchmarks, so they are created so that the one who is borrowing the most gets the biggest weighting, and that's usually not a good debt investment strategy. In that sense, most of the boards are ignoring the biggest decision, mm-hmm. that how do you define your investable universe? And our message is that you need to figure out your intent. Mm-hmm. And the intent is the why of your investing. And the most simple question you can address into the intentionality is that as an investor, do you care? Do you care about your what your money is doing? And I think, right. I'm guessing here why Rockefeller Foundation coined the term impact investing, because they figured mm-hmm. out that, you know, of course they give a lot of the grants, but what are you doing with most of your money? And then when you mobilize that big chunk of your money for creating impact, your overall impact is a lot greater. So you can say that it's like describing your own conscience when you define your intentionalities. For some people, it means, you know, deriving the values. For some people, it's mission. You can embed culture because we have different cultures. So there is no standard recipe for mm-hmm, defining mm-hmm. your intention.
But tell us more about also, what about big banks, you know, you see behind here and there, or also in Finland. So you are collaborating with some academics. But have you been able also to talk already to professionals who are in the practice applying still portfolio theory about your version? And did they listen to you? What were the reactions on that?
Obviously, the closest network, we are having dialogue. Most who have read the paper are very happy about it. But no, we haven't had yet time to market this theory. I think this is one of the first opportunities we talk about the theory, but of course we are biased, but we think it holds water very well. And I think if we move from the intentionality, the second component, which is very important, is what sort of data will you put into your investment strategy? Mm-hmm. And you have two components of relevant data. What corporations are deriving, they of course have their accounting, and most of the accounting is backward looking. Mm-hmm. Any corporation is looking at the numbers from the department, division, corporation, group, and it's backward looking information. And what we feel, and this is why we had tremendous help from Professor Arne Fagerström from Gävle University, who is one of the authors of our article, that he's a specialist on this area. And the main point there is that for the sustainable accounting, you need to inbound the externalities, because so far the accounting has been inside out, and now we need to start bringing in the externalities, i.e. Outside in.
Sounds complicated, eh?
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, but you know, if something is difficult, it still doesn't mean that, you know, if you are a petroleum company, you are adversely affecting the climate. Yeah. There needs to be a cost, because the planet Absolutely. Currently is carrying the cost. Mm-hmm. And how mm-hmm. much then that cost is, that's for the accounting people to, mm-hmm. to try to derive and find a number. Of course, all investors can have their own expression on that side. So it's including externalities, including especially the stakeholders, what you are doing, and the second component on the information systems is the risk, and so far all the risk world is focused on quantifiable numbers, and these quantifiable numbers is just way too narrow picture of the real life. And it can be described that on top of the quantifiable numbers, the uncertainty, i.e. potential of the systemic risks, needs to be embedded. Yeah. And especially for that side, the specialty area of Ville, the foresight analysis is extremely powerful. Mm-hmm. I think with these two components, we can then derive on to the last item, which is the co-creation, collaboration. Mm-hmm. And so far, every investor has thought, I have my investment strategy. I try to beat the others with the performance numbers. And they don't realize this hugely important factor that markets are not occurring. Markets are inherently built, and money talks. Big investors, when they collaborate, for sure they get the outcome they want.
But it's also, you know, in the real life, when you think about how we perceive happiness or success, being better than others make you happy, or where the others are miserable, then you are happy, right? how crazy, how sick is that?
I think impact investing just recently got a couple of very nice victories that it was not any single investor, but the Shell Exxon AGMs proved
exactly
that when you have a movement, and behind the movement, you have a number of investors. Okay, they got what they wanted. And this will be happening more and more often. And this is the power of collaboration. Money talks.
Absolutely. Petri, but tell us also more about blended finance. Also your definition and how you've been working on that in your institute. So what's something new, what you have created in these terms?
Can I give a word for this, how this foresight is implemented in practice? Because I think
it's interesting
for the audience. Will would you go through this part?
Yeah, I will be happy to do that. So in many ways, what we're witnessing is really the shift from the era of risk towards the era of uncertainty. Now, anybody with the tools we have today with AI and machine learning algorithms, you know, and with big data, it's a lot of data out there. So for a lot of people, for a lot of organizations to start to even comprehend where to start to make sense of all that data around, which can be meaningful to you, because everything ultimately could be meaningful. Now, it's very easy to get overwhelmed and then to fall on path dependencies. Path dependencies meaning that we often do what we are used to doing.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
When you are being overwhelmed, you just do intuitively what you know, you have always been doing. But we already have understood that, you know, the way we have been investing, the ways we have been managing our corporations, our lives, is not sustainable. So we have to do something differently. Now, where to start? Because there are just too much things happening. Abraham Lincoln has said, you know, famously, that the best way to predict the future is to create it. So really, what the future is, really what we try to do is not to predict the future. You know, it's a big misnomer that people come to foresight professional asking, well, can you tell us what is the future? No, we can't, because it's not there yet. You know, we have to create the future before it can be there. So what we do as foresight professionals is to open the minds and eyes of people to see that you don't have to do everything the way you have been doing up until now, that there's multiple opportunities and alternative universes, you know, that we can go into based on the choices we make right now, right today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that comes with a big sense of responsibility, which again, you know, is not part of the of the Western discourse. You know, the Western discourse in terms of philosophy is very much a choice between the individual and the collective. And either if you're on the right, you say the individual comes first, and then if you're on the left, you say the society comes first. But actually, if you look into all of these indigenous ancient wisdom traditions, if you look at the Ubuntu philosophy, if you look at the Maori philosophy, even if you look at the writings in the Quran, you know, basically at the core of all of these wisdom traditions is not the rights of the individuals, and it's not the happiness of the collective over the individual, but it is the individual responsibility. It is the responsibility of the human to be in service of the collective, and that's how you gain the actual happiness. So even if it's, even what Sveta, you mentioned about, you know, somebody beating the competitor and the benchmark, you know, yes, it's a short-term happiness that you get there, but I feel that might be happiness, but that is not joy. I think joy happens from being able to find meaning in the work you do. And that meaning can only happen through connectedness. So you need, so there is the English saying that no man is an island. So we need others to become fully self-realized. I've been very fortunate lately to speak with a Canadian thinker called Andrei Korikov, and Andrei works for the Jordan Peterson Enterprises. And, you know, we've been having amazing conversations lately about what makes the sovereign self. And basically what we have realized is that in order for the individual to become sovereign, he or she needs others, because we can't fill the gaps in our personalities by ourselves. So we need to connect with others in order to become full ourselves. I mean, it goes very philosophical.
We're always going philosophical at the end here. You know, interconnectedness.
I just wanted to ask one question on what you said. So when you said that the collective is more important or should be paid more attention to than the individual, aren't you very much saying what Xi is saying from China?
Actually, we're not saying that the collective is more important than the individual. We are saying that the ancient wisdom traditions, what they say is not a choice between these two. It's the Western mind and the Western philosophy, which is saying that you have to choose between these two. What the wisdom traditions are saying is that, yes, my life as an individual, as a human, as a sovereign self is important. However, I can gain my full role in life only by being in service to the community. So whatever blessings life would give me in terms of becoming the steward of capital for capital, serve others, again, that creates a huge liability in many ways that I need to commit to being in service because I have been receiving these blessings. You see, the Western relationships tend to be very transactional. You know, we enter into business agreements with the end in sight. We do that also, especially when we look at venture capital investing. You know, it's always you do it for a period. However, the real relationships and value isn't built through transactions, but it's actually built through relations. So again, this is something that I think we have to look into as we are trying to shape the future of impact investing, is also look beyond the kind of fund structures that we have in place today, because if we do agree that we need more long-term investing and long-term value building, we shouldn't then use instruments which are designed to be short-term and transactional. So, but again, going to what Petri wanted me to speak about in the beginning was what is
blended finance? We are still waiting for blended finance.
Yeah, we are coming there.
Now we see you can speak.
I see the smile on Petri's face. He's just sitting and smiling.
Yes.
So essentially what Foresight does, I will finish this in 1 minute. Foresight really looks into what is the preferred outcomes. So basically we need to engage all the stakeholders to have a conversation based on defining first what are the intents we have. We enter into business transactions and relationships in life without knowing what is the intent of the other person, hence increasing the complexity and possibility for a misunderstanding greatly, because I don't know what you want from me. So we first need to be able to define our intents. And as we do this with all of our stakeholders, what we can then do is we can map our preferred future. So basically, we can build a mission to which we will mobilize other stakeholders to join us to make this mission come into reality. And what do we do then is we do backcasting. Instead of forecasting, we do backcasting from that future towards today, and then we measure our progress, not against past performance, what we do today in accounting and in our lives, but much like in the budget. You know, in the budget, you define a budget and then you see have we achieved it or not. So we would do the same in planning. So we would have the preferred future that we communicate to all the stakeholders. And then year by year, we look into how far are we from getting to that future. And now to blended finance.
Great. Thanks for the idea. Now I think we have to have a big talk about this. About preferred future and how to back plan. And now I understand how Petri got 5 children.
yes.
Back to blended finance.
Yeah, blended finance is something we got interested as a practical way to put SPT into practice. And
maybe you can quickly define your definition about blended finance for those who never heard about that before.
Yeah, I think the blended finance is actually a very poor term. It doesn't mean anything. What is blended finance? But people have meant with it that for the bigger problems, especially the planetary issues, we have a need to get corporations back and investors back to finance these problems. This is something we had long time ago before governments had this big role. And now clearly the public sector or the NGOs, they, even though they are doing brilliant work, especially the NGOs, their money isn't enough. And now the question is that how do we structure these arrangements so that it would be appealing for the private capital to put their money into these issues. And one key component here is that if you think about, for example, an infrastructure project, like Ville said, we have teamed up with Foresight Solutions. And these gentlemen, Andreas Harbig and Craig Stevens, they are experts on the infrastructure side, and most of the let's assume you build a bridge somewhere, the public sector sees it as a cost, and so a bad thing, more taxes, and then like the city of Zurich, you build a bridge. Perhaps into an island which is currently uninhabited, and through the bridge you can have a lot more valuable land. People will move there, they start living, and we've created some economic value to that. Now the question is it absolutely necessary always for the public sector to invest 100% of a single project, or 0%, which is happening with the PPP structures, public-private arrangements. And I'm sure if you have enough will, there is a way to figure out that maybe somebody can only own 20% of the bridge. Mm-hmm. And then private people, for example, the people who live on the island, they would have an interest to own the bridge, or even more
practical. People always getting into play, you know.
Yeah, or if you think that of a London underground system, there's a lot of people in London, and obviously they commute a lot, and underground is a lot more climate friendly solution. And the question could be that, is it absolutely necessary for them to own all the underground tunnels? Maybe they sell part of those ones so they can build a new one and get the commuting happening. I mean, these are the kind of practical examples on the blended finance. And I think here the point is what we have figured out, and it's based on our understanding, is that actually the financial engineering has done more or less every possible structuring mm-hmm. approach. So that's not the difficult point. And when we look at the many of the blended finance seminars, people are crying for new instruments. We don't need new instruments. We have all the knowledge to structure these arrangements. But what we need is the similar thing, what the sustainable portfolio theory is deriving. We need a big change of minds so that we can get mm-hmm. these things to happen. And this is what we have been studying, researching, and one of our hypotheses on the research program is very simple. We think that one of the reasons why private capital is not mobilizing is that people in different groups, public sector, you know, DFIs, private sector investors, they don't even know each other.
And talk about the same things with different terms. So they both say that we should involve the other. So the private capital is saying that the government should take a stronger role, and all the governments, all the DFIs, in all of the reports you will see on SDG financing, they all say that this program is here to mobilize private capital.
Yeah,
but then exactly. How do we make this common language, guys? How do we make them finally understand each other and meet and collaborate and act?
This is something our research program is derived to solve. And of course we need a certain type of actions. So this is something we try to solve, that how do we create situations that we can find, because when you look at the impact world, you have wonderful projects, very creative mm-hmm. solutions like INSU Resilience Fund. They mobilized a hurricane insurance for people, which is costing maybe $20, and we know that there are plenty of hurricanes in the Philippines, and mm-hmm. they found a way how to use reinsurance and then this fund to mobilize. Most of these projects are too small for bigger investors. And hence their first reaction is, it's too small. I know I did it when I'm an institutional investor, take these small projects off my table. And now we have wonderful projects, and then the bigger institutions are saying we don't have enough deal flow. I think it's quite simple mm-hmm. matching exercise.
That's very chamomile.
This is why, exactly. I was just saying, this is why chamomile was created, you know, to match projects with investors, with experts, to engage and move more private capital into impact investing.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the problem is recognizable, right? It just,
And we hear it at every layer, around the project layer, finance, everywhere. I wanted to, 2 weeks ago, we had a guest. I don't know if you watched our interview. They are mentioning, they turned the term ADM, the alternative development model, which is being already implemented or as a test, as a pilot project in Norway, in few states in India, in Japan. And now you are mentioning the beyond blended finance, which is going further than blended finance. Did you hear or did you read of this term ADM, the alternative development model? Because no, it's bit quite similar. I think both are working quite similar on that way.
Yeah, basically what they say is like, so SDGs are solving the symptoms a little bit, and ADM is creating a new base. So then SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals, are then much easier. It's just a logical outcome when we also change the system, the base, right? Because now we are trying to solve SDGs with the old economic system and so on. So the ADM, Alternative Development Program, is about that. So changing
the
base.
It's a bit like what Ville was saying, that you are looking at the future, so and then work at the present to see to create your own future.
We definitely, I feel that what we need is we also need, and that's why one of the things that we want to do through the collaboration with the Ubuntu Foundation is to derive what could be the Ubuntu economics. Why we call it that is because a lot of the things in classic economics is based on theoretical design premises, such as scarcity. Scarcity, rationality, perfect information, and the likes of them. So there is no problem in having them as theoretical models. You know, also, it does say in the second or the third chapter of every economics, principles of economics textbook, that none of these things are real, so they do not correspond with reality and the actual human behavior, but let us assume. Now, the problem is what, you know, we don't read the let us assume. So now people go forward, making more advanced theories based on these theoretical assumptions. And now we have governments hiring economists based on these type of mental games to design policies. And we end up in the situation that we are basing actual human institutions on models which are by nature, and it says that on the page 2 or 3 or 4, that none of this is how we really act as humans, but yet our institutions are designed for humans that don't exist. So
this is exactly the point, Ville, you know, that there are so many research models and which are working with symptoms, but none of them is kind of working with the cause of the issues like climate change, biodiversity, and so on. So what happens if the next pandemic sort of or other natural disaster hits? Is your model, BBF, also kind of addressing it or mitigating such risks? So is it the other model different from the one that I was just talking about?
I don't think that this is a competition of models. You know, I don't think that we stand to gain anything if Beyond Blended Finance will prove to be more correct than something else. I think we're just coming into a situation that if we don't quickly change the ways we actually behave, you know, on a daily basis, you know, we have drastic consequences to deal with. So it's not about being right. It's more about collaboration. You know, let's get all of these models together and let's work in collaboration to change, you know, what needs to be changed. And let's learn, you know, let's not focus on the what, but let's focus on the how. And because that's ultimately what we need to do. Climate adaptation, any kind of living in the complex, volatile world that requires a lot of agility, which can only be based on learning how to learn. So when things change, we just need to learn how to adapt quickly. And if we can find new economic models, you know, that's an amazing thing. And I welcome all initiatives which would look into economics and into social systems from the perspective of individuals assuming responsibility and then looking at what does that mean for our social systems.
But, I mean, I was thinking in my opinion, I would like to know also your opinion, is one of the major weaknesses why none of the alternative models are working is because we humans are working with the primal motivation of greed.
Pietri, what do you think about greed?
I watched the movie Gordon Gekko, famously emphasizing the greed point. I'm not sure if the greed is obviously sometimes needed also. But I would like to pinpoint some research which is already done. And for example, Nobel Prize winner Stiglitz has talked very much about the discount rates. I mean, the simple things are sometimes the most dangerous ones. And if you think about, let's take an example of a forest project, reforestation project, and you want to do something in an emerging country where the government bond yields are, let's say, 10 to 15%. I mean, the reforestation projects, the nature is, of course, biodiversity is a little bit different in every location. But if you look at the from the monetary perspective, do you really need to be getting 20-25% yield in a country where the bond yield is high? If you compare it to the neighboring country where the government yield is, let's say, 5%, and quite often how we look at the risk premium in the traditional finance, it can lead into funny situation, because you know, if you look at it from the sustainable investing lens, it's actually probably the best investment you would then go into the high yielding country and do your reforestation program there.
And not only reforestation, if we look at any kind of infrastructure investing and we just apply the typical discounted cash flow modeling into investments where the investment period and the real value created is after 10, 20, 30 years, obviously using the models we have today, you know, those benefits in as cash flows are minuscule compared to the ones that you derive in the short term. So something makes you wonder that would we actually need for those long-term value building projects, such as infrastructure projects, would we perhaps need other kinds of ways of calculating their net present value, which would more capture the value that they create in that future? Also taking into consideration the intergenerational equity. A lot of this discussion on the evils of the ways we use discount rates today has a lot to do with the rights of the future generations, because our way of using DCF, you know, today, that leads us to favoring investments which are realized today or in the immediate future over those investments which would create value for our children and their children. Mm-hmm. So there is this big question.
And if I may continue with other stupidities, is one is of course the GPLP model, which the founder of Total Impact Capital, Arthur Wood, has done much more work. But why would you need a GPLP model for infrastructure projects? Let's take once again the example of London Underground. If the common people, normal commuting people, get 0% return on their money on the bank, which is lending the money onwards to who knows where, if the underground entity is offering 2% yield if they finance their own commuting vehicle, that could be actually appealing to them.
Yeah, you know, here I just wanted to add, because this is not something new. You mentioned one of my friends, Joe Stiglitz. He mentioned, and also I don't know if you know Sony Kapoor from Norway. He also mentioned the same story already, I think, 7 or 10 years ago.
And more than that. I think it was already during the Clinton administration when Joseph was working as the advisor. They already changed the way they look at the infrastructure discount rates. And that was something that he shared a lot on this experience when I had the chance to actually spend time with him in Zurich. In Zurich, in Switzerland, in January 2020, when he was the keynote speaker at the Sustainable Finance Conference.
I was also there. But then the question is, one of the points which they had also mentioned then is that products, banking products like ETFs and all that, is doing severe damage to this way of thinking or this product?
Well, now we come back to the modern portfolio theory and the current investing, how the strategic asset allocation is done. You know, if you pick up this most common easy choice and take whatever benchmark the other people are using, then you are kind of giving away 80% of your security selection. You have more or less the same kind of a portfolio than everybody else has, and this, if not anything else, is leading into tremendous amount of herding, and herding is not good for investing.
Mm-hmm. But still, it is.
But everyone is still doing it.
It's
right?
Better to fail. What was it? It's better to fail together than to succeed alone.
Yeah, this whole IBM choice example.
I wanted to ask to Ville. Ville, you mentioned in that you are working on the connection between Islamic finance and impact investment. But can you please explain a bit more on this? Because in my opinion, as long as people live with the idea that they are above the nature and better than every other species, we will go on with the destruction of the planet. Only when we consider ourselves as a part of the ecosystem and not separate, only then do we have the chance of saving our planet and our future.
Mm-hmm. We are all one.
Yeah, it's or like Ubuntu, what Ubuntu really means as a principle, it means that I am because we are.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think this thinking is very inherent in impact investing, but also in Islamic finance. So how did we actually get into this whole point of looking at Islamic finance and impact investing was actually when I met with Petri about 6-7 years ago. I introduced a project that Petri then started working with, which was regarding revenue share-based funding for startups and innovation companies. The interesting part was that since revenue share doesn't imply an interest, but it's still regarded in a way as a debt instrument, we actually were looking that actually this type of an investment, you know, financing based on revenue share, would most likely be Sharia compliant. And then we started looking into the peculiarities of the different kinds of Islamic instruments. And we found out that yes, most of them are based on revenue share type of arrangements. However, they're not being used to fund innovation. So the big part of what we do and one of our research programs with the Institute that I also do in collaboration with Dubai Future Academy and several other government entities here in Dubai is discussions on building something called what we call the innovation sukuk. So sukuk is a traditional Islamic financing instrument, which usually is backed by a fixed asset. So it basically needs to be backed by a fixed asset for this financing transaction to be able to be structured. The first beautiful thing about Sukuk is that actually in the Sukuk financing contract, you actually have to define what are your social objectives. So how are you planning? How is this transaction? How will it increase social cohesion and equity among people? So basically, in order to do an Islamic finance transaction, you have to map these things. So when we found this out, we realized that, you know, this is actually inherently valuable for the global impact investing community to look at the historical experience of Islamic finance on how they structure and define the social impact that they need to be creating. Another very key component, especially to what you, Sveta, were asking about the environment part, is that actually in the Quran, it mentions specifically that humanity is being placed by God as the stewards of the planet. Now, the stewardship in the way it's being defined in the Quran actually reflects not the right of humanity to use these resources, but it reflects the responsibility as the steward to safeguard and to be the guardian of all those resources. Mm-hmm. So actually, environment is very much in the key of any kind of transactions. And the second part of that is that in any kind of Islamic financing, you have to define your intent. And the Quran mentions several times intent as the key component of a virtuous person. So any kind of virtuous action, positive action by an individual is being judged according to two lines. First is the vertical line, which is my intent towards God. So am I aligning myself with God when I take an action? That's one part of being virtuous. But then the second part is also towards other people. So mm-hmm. am I taking my action in such a way that it builds harmony and equity among people, or am I taking my action in such a way that it's against the harmony and equity among people? So I
really,
should align.
It sounds good in the theory, you know? It sounds very good in the theory. How is it in the real life, you know, the connection between Islamic banking and impact investing? And is Islamic banking indeed implementing all these things like you're mentioning?
So something that actually came in the discussions with very high-ranking people involved in this world, you know, they also advised us, let's make a difference between Islamic banking and Islamic financing. Mm-hmm. Because what banking does overall in the world, banking does banking, mm-hmm. you know, and this is the basic principle. You know, people need financing for their projects, you know, and if they want a banking product for that, they will get a banking product. Mm-hmm. In the Islamic world, that will be an Islamic banking product. You know, in the Western world, that will be a Western banking product. However, when we speak about impact investing and we want to connect it to Islamic finance, that's what we focus on, is the Islamic financing part. Mm-hmm. A lot of these innovations that we discuss, such as connecting Islamic financing and the principles behind to financing innovation, hasn't been done. So a lot of this is very new. So we are basically now going back to the principles and looking at drafting new instruments and structures which could be placed today in order to fuel the knowledge economy in the region.
Exactly.
And I think there is also, I think, the key point within the Islamic finance, which we think is and should be appealing to impact investing, is the concept of risk sharing. And this concept of risk sharing is definitely needed for mobilizing private capital into impact areas. And this is something which needs different kind of new kind of thinking, and it needs collaboration. We have these examples, what for example the Garant company from the UK is doing in the emerging markets. So there are ways how the structures can be modified in such a sense that the people are private sector is comfortable with the risk. The first blue bond was part of a structure like this, and I think we will need more these kind of organizations which are smoothing the transaction, acting as a catalyst. We have already NGOs on certain areas. We have public sector who has a need to get something done, not the money, and we need to look on a different way how we mobilize and catalyze these projects.
Exactly. No, because you know that we are also on with SIA, with the Swiss Impact Investment Association, and we brought the head of the 12 religions 3 years ago here to Switzerland, and that was also including the Shias, the Sunni leadership. And one of the article, I think it was in one of your article, you mentioned this Islamic finance with impact investment, where you mentioned negative screening. And that is not only with Islam, but that's also with other religions is the same issue. Is on negative screening, mm-hmm. and not positive, like a value-based investing, like Ville, you also mentioned. which is very, very important part of impact investment. So where do you see the connection on that, or you are working on it?
I mean, basically the way we look at it is that obviously there is the base of that. So the Quran is mentioning certain areas which are haram, so which you shouldn't be entering into. So obviously that connection with the negative screening is there. But as we were saying, that the way they describe intentionality is much deeper than in the way we understand in the West what intent really means. But that again comes to the new products that we are developing at the moment based on this thinking. So we don't have a lot of examples from today where this type of thinking would have already been put in place. But actually the responses we have received from talking to even the Islamic Development Bank and some of the other leading institutions within this field has been highly encouraging, because they also see a lot of value of this, of mobilizing the Islamic capital to do good, because doing good is also viewed as a virtue and as an important virtue in the thinking. For them to be able to do this outside of the traditional scope of what the Islamic banking is doing is definitely something that we have received a very positive feedback in these consultations.
And I think the Catholic Church is also wondering at the same.
The principles that you came up with for faith-based investing, you know, these have been really key in bringing about this this conversation. However, obviously, a lot of institutions which have age, they also are all inherently not suffering, perhaps, but they are not outside of the scope of what I mentioned as path dependency. So for any kind of large institution, it will be difficult to try something very creative and something very new that they haven't done before. But that's why also we need to back everything with research. So instead of, even both me and Petri, even if I seem to be very philosophical, I'm actually quite practical also in reality. But what we really thought with Petri, maybe, yeah. It's still subject for more investigation.
But where our audience can find the report which you are producing? Is it public somewhere on the website of your institute, or where can people read about that?
The institute has the articles. ResearchGate has the sustainable portfolio theory. Unfortunately, the academic world is very boring nowadays, that first you write 18 months for a report and then you play with the technicalities with the academic journal, how you get the bloody thing in. And then they screw it back and forth for a year before they publish it. So we are somewhere in the middle of that process. But anyway, ResearchGate has it licensed as a working paper, and it's on our LinkedIn pages and on the IIIs.
Okay, so it's published on LinkedIn, yeah?
Yeah, it's on at least on my...
On LinkedIn and also
publish
on
it
the...
on Chamomile. I suggest you publish it on Chamomile for more people reading about that.
You give us the details and we publish it there.
Yeah, we will. Sure, great.
Petri, can you please summarize the conclusion of your article, Rethinking Strategic Asset Allocation Through Impact Investment?
Yes, I think there, as we already discussed quite a bit, the strategic asset allocation process, I had problems with it. I think it has been flawed, and that the boards are not doing the job they should be doing. So, and in this sense, what we later discovered after this, as a solution for this, how do you define your investable universe? And that can be done with workshops and practical exercises of defining your intentionality. And you know, you get it. Let's take the example of pension funds, and because you know nowadays you have the idea that you maximize the wealth of the pension savings either in the defined benefit system or defined contribution. And once the person is retiring, you dump him or her the money and say, good luck.
Theoretically, it works, huh? Not always in the practice.
Yeah, theoretically. But then, you know, maybe if you think about the good intentions, maybe pension funds could think about the investable universe and highlight, for example, senior age care homes where people can have a good life after they have retired and are no longer able to live at home. There are a few very nice examples from the Australian superannuation funds where I think it was the nurses fund which is looking at possibilities to invest into healthcare, quite natural area for themselves, and this sort of links what is the purpose of my money. They are quite easy to build, and do we care about something? And if you care about your senior citizens as a pension institution, which would feel quite normal, you don't just dump them the money. You try to create an environment where people can have a respectable and good life.
Mm-hmm. But in one of your reports, I was surprised reading that pension funds, on the other hand, typically have a long-term orientation in providing
They should have.
Yes, they should have for the future.
Now the
regulators
have spoiled that in a big time, I think. And this is also a big area for the impact investing. We have a very limited, narrow understanding of a fiduciary duty, and most of the fiduciary duty is just focused on wealth accumulation.
Yeah,
and, exactly. And you have Canada, UK, Sweden. As examples of countries who have started to think about maybe the fiduciary duty is also about that you don't destroy, you don't screw up your planet by maximizing this wealth.
Yeah. So but this is the explanation time, of them is still investing in fossil fuels and rainforest. Yeah,
they invest, they could do it, because also we touched this area of exclusion, which I think is too easy way. I think this, if you find a bad company, buy yourself in and change the strategy, the company.
It's actually an interesting thing that also in the same conference where I guess you also attended, Ben, there was also a lecture by Professor Alexander Wagner discussing about the concept of fiduciary duty and especially how it's a relatively new idea that, you know, that the boards are only responsible for the shareholders, whereas, you know, he brought up many cases from 1930s in Delaware, in the US and elsewhere, where in order to establish a corporation, you actually had to define what is the social objective of that corporation exists. So I remember also back in my business school days, one of our professors was asking all the students, what is the purpose of the company? And, you know, most students would say to make a profit. And he was saying, well, what are all these entities? If you look at the corporate, you know, annual statements of all of these companies who are not making profit, who are making loss, does that make them not companies? Does this make them not corporations? Because we have a lot of them. So we have like a lot of companies who are making a loss. So then if this is the purpose of the company is to make a profit, then these should not be defined as companies. What he said that is that basically what a company does is simply taking resources and transfigurating them in order to build something new. And that new has to be based on some sort of an objective or a sense of purpose. And that's basically what the company does. Sometimes it does it at a profit, preferably, because you also need to continue doing that. So if you keep doing a loss, you're not on a sustainable basis. However, you know, I think it's just a very narrow, but also it's a very new definition that the purpose of organizations or even investors should only be making money. Because even if you talk to many VC firms, you know, the actual basis of making the investment is probably that they love the product, they love the team doing that, and you know, they do trust that this will give them the returns they want, but it's not the plain calculation of numbers.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, I wanted to ask you, what would you need to make your Impact Innovation Institute more known? Like, what support would you need around the globe that we would bring this sustainable portfolio theory into practice?
Well, we need more resources, of course, more crazy people like
more money.
Yeah, more money and more
also
people.
Collaborators. Yeah. Also collaborators to collaborate with us, because ultimately, like we discussed, you know, it's not the matter of being right. So all of these people who have alternative economic models, who have alternative financing models, we should bring all these, what Petri refers as crazy minds, together, and then let us really think how we can scale all of these solutions and also turn them into practical solutions and instruments, which we would then test and pilot and see and back with research to show that sometimes these crazy ideas are equally beneficial, if not more beneficial, than the models that we're used to.
So basically, we need to wait a couple of months or half a year, and then the article will be out and maybe the Nobel Prize will be coming. Or how do you see that?
I think it's already been shipped. But we are not just, we just don't know which year.
Great. That's what I wanted to hear, you know. Otherwise, why would you do that? We need to change the world. We need to have big impact.
We need to save the world.
There are also other very talented people. I'm suggesting people read what John Lukomnik and Jim Hawley have been writing about moving beyond modern portfolio theory. They have very similar thoughts than we have, and they are better known than we are. Of course, we were first, but I mean, we are not alone looking at the potential issues what investing needs to have, and because the money has power, if we want really to solve some of the planetary problems, sustainable investing is the way. Of course, we need changes in the regulatory environment. You know, the social enterprises should need different type of legislation. So there's a lot what the public sector could do if they someday want to do something beneficial.
We are running out of time. I just have maybe for last question about sustainable development goals. You know, there are a lot of theories since 1960 that it can be solved. So what is your theory, or is there any model why it's still not solved, or how do you see that? Will we be able to solve them till 2030?
Because I read we were talking with the UNDP once, they were at our, and they mentioned that none of the countries, including the EU members, have policies in place which can make EU solve these SDGs or be aligned with the Paris Agreement.
I think SDGs are a great preferred future to have. I think what was missing when designing those ones was that they were never regarded as investment target. And that is something we should build a bridge into.
And not only thought, but they were not designed to be investment targets. So I think, you know, there is work that needs to go in there in order to make them investment targets.
Yeah, I see. And you want to ask last question? I know you want to hear that.
yeah, exactly.
Okay, please,
so,
go ahead.
Bille, I read in your bio you write poems. I would like to know in which language, and can you tell us something?
I've always loved poetry. You know, I think poetry is a way for me to express myself. And I think, you know, through poetry, it sometimes really helps you to let go of the rational mind. And I think sometimes even when we look at impact investing and making an impact, you know, sometimes the Japanese have this the Zen Buddhists have this certain way of asking questions. They're called koans, and the koans are questions to which you can't find a rational answer. One of my favorite koans is that we all know the sound of two hands clapping, but what is the sound of one hand clapping?
I have to find that out.
I actually wanted to also to create an impact song, you know? So something like Imagine by John Lennon, but a more modern version of impact investing.
Let's agree now that by next year, we will be playing in your third season, in the beginning, always the impact song.
That's perfect.
And even though we, at least I am not able to sing, we can definitely make a rap.
Yes, moral support.
we are the one hand clapping with Ben.
Yeah, exactly.
Four hands, right? Together.
Yeah.
Thank you
so much for joining us today, Petri, Vili. It was a real pleasure to have you with us. And we're really looking forward to see your paper in academic research published for everyone, and wish you good luck with that, of course.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So?
It was really amazing. I learned so much today. And it's really...
Yeah, I think it's very important, you know, the third dimension, risk, return, and impact finally is going to academics, and then it will take time till they will teach the student about that, and then that, of course, at the banks they are implemented in the practice, but still it's important to take
and also the pension funds. Absolutely. And the big guys.
Yes, yeah. Very important. So congratulations to both of them making this step. So anything else to say? Or
no, I just want to say next week you're going to see again an amazing speaker, but we'll tell it to you later. Keep in touch and thank you for watching us.
Act with impact. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjee's. I'm Svetlana.
And I'm Ben.
In season 2, we will be traveling around the globe, out of Switzerland, and bring amazing leaders from businesses, thought leaders, political leaders, of course, investors and experts.
We're working at implementing and realizing all the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, better known as SDGs.
And they are also making profit.
Hello, I am Amina Gurifakim, and I'm the sixth president of the Republic of Mauritius.
My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation.
I'm Amisha Adishkutai. I'm an entrepreneur here in Adishkutai. I'm running on one side a financial services company.
You know, hundreds of deals a month, we are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing.
So join us to discover impact investing ecosystem.
See you every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's.
See you on Friday. Act with impact.